Case number 13-1304, Mary V. Harris Foundation Appellant v. Federal Communications Commission. Mr. Martin for the appellant, Mr. Dunn for the appellee.
Mr. Martin, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Donald Martin. I'm here to represent the Mary V. Harris Foundation today. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This case involves an interpretation of Section 307B of the Communications Act. And in spite of all the complications and sophistication that various commission orders have given to interpreting that act over the years, this case can come down to a very simple analysis of the core basic reason for 307B, and that is to provide service to as many people as possible, radio service, broadcast service. The statute says there should be a fair, efficient, and equitable distribution of radio service. A lot of times the commission, and especially in the proceedings that we're talking about here, has focused on communities, providing a fair and efficient distribution to communities. But communities are nothing but people. And if you go to the core purpose of the act and of this section, it means that there should be adequate service to the largest number of people possible. Now, as a policy matter, in the non-commercial radio comparative selection proceeding, the commission decided implicitly that there should be at least two non-commercial radio services available to everyone in the United States. They did that because they set up the preference in the beginning for applications that would propose a service to people who don't already have a service or only have one. So we infer from that there is a basic policy that two is inadequate. It is the fundamental amount of service that anybody should have. Having decided that, the commission came along and added an unusual fillip to the criterion and established a threshold criterion that an applicant would receive a 307B preference in a comparative selection process if it provides a first or second service to at least 2,000 people and that figure represented at least 10% of the population within its service contour. As we see from the facts in this case, that can lead to an anomalous situation where a vastly larger number of underserved people, as defined by the policy, don't get service, and an applicant providing service to a much smaller number is awarded the construction permit for the new station. The commission argues that this policy was adopted to bring some coherence and a bright line to the process of determining the 307B preferences that should be given to applicants. Prior to the adoption of these rules, it was pretty much left up to hearing examiners and judges in each case how much weight to give to this factor. And we would agree that the prior system was subjective and vague and open to uncertainty, and a bright line is a good idea. The trouble is the 10% is the wrong bright line. We think that the clearer...
Did you or anyone else raise that in the rulemaking at the time of the rule was made?
I don't think that any other concept was ever discussed in the rulemaking until the very end, until reply comments.
What did you understand my question to be?
The answer is no. No, we did not.
Okay. Isn't it a little untimely to be raising it now? Or is it?
If the commission adopts a rule that is contrary to the statute, I think we can raise it any time.
Okay. How is this contrary to the statute?
I'm sorry.
How is it contrary to the statute?
Because As I was just explaining, the statute requires a fair distribution to all the citizens of the United States. The result that we see in this case is anomalous in that it provides, it leaves a big chunk of people underserved with less than two non-commercial services.
Are we to strike down the rule because it can sometimes have anomalous results? Or are we to say that we're not going to apply it in this case?
If it's applied in any case, it seems to me to be inappropriate.
So we're to strike down the rule then?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, your fallback position is a waiver, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Your fallback position is a waiver.
Yeah, that's right.
And you came within, what do you have, 9.46%?
That's right.
Now, the commission already rejected a 9.33% in the omnibus order, isn't that right?
The baseline was 10% there, yes.
Well, isn't that what it is now? What I'm asking you is, the commission has already rejected, with the bright line 10%, an applicant who was at 9.33%. It did that in the omnibus order. Isn't that correct?
It did do that, but I don't feel that they explained themselves very well. And they just copycatted that into rejecting our request for a waiver. So there really was no good explanation, good thorough examination of that waiver request. In the brief, they say that the waiver request was not compelling, but it was in the sense that our application would have provided service, a second service, to a vastly bigger number, six times as many people as the other applicant. Surely that is what everybody says is the underlying purpose of the rule and of the statute.
Does that mean, then, that any rule that recognizes any other factor than the number of people served or the number of people first served is in violation of the statute?
I think that, yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, so the criterion must be number of people served. No other criterion is considered.
I'm sorry, I'll modify that a little bit to say the number of people served up to the point of what is considered the basic adequacy for service. For non-commercial radio, that's two signals. For commercial, it happens to be five signals. If you're providing
for a non-commercial, which is what we're dealing with.
That's right, it's two signals. So
the number of people first or second served is the only criterion that can be considered consistent with the statute in your view. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's my view.
So if that's the case, you could have a situation in which a trivial number of people are getting their first or second NCE service and a trivial number of people are also getting in a metropolitan area are getting yet another station, right? And that would be favored over an application in which the trivial number of people not getting an NCE now would continue not to get one, but 300,000 people in the metropolitan area would get one.
Well, I don't know how you're defining trivial. I think
There was one case involving 87 people, wasn't there?
That's correct. Clearly, that number is more than what the commission would consider de minimis. In the rules that we're talking about here, the minimum required to even get attention was 2,000.
So you're not contesting that, are you?
I'm sorry?
You're not contesting that aspect of the rule?
Not the figure itself, no.
Yeah, okay.
I think there could be a floor that's reasonable somewhere. I don't know what it is. That's
well, so it's 2,000. They've established it. You're not contesting it, so that's what
that's
it
right.
is. Okay.
We're contesting the percentage part because yeah. that throws everything off. The 10% factor in the formula allows for people to contrive their applications to meet the rule for the benefit of the preference and then later go away and create some other kind of coverage service.
Well, the first 4 years, they're locked in, right?
Sorry?
Aren't they locked in for the first 4 years?
They're locked into providing service to that unserved area, but I don't think there's a prohibition on them increasing their power or increasing their coverage area in other directions.
We'll get that clarified in a few minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Dunn?
Good morning. Matthew Dunn for the FCC. I think there were just a couple points I would make, and then I'm available, obviously, for any questions. The first is on whether or not the rule itself is unlawful or arbitrary. Just emphasize that what appellant would need to show is that the rule is an impermissible interpretation of the statute, and it would seem, in response to Judge Santel's questions, that I believe he feels that any rule which takes account of anything other than the number of people served is impermissible. I think that line is foreclosed by a number of cases in the Supreme Court, including Allentown Broadcasting and its own court's law, for example, Lou Alvin Media. So I think that doesn't get him very far. I think on the waiver point.
Did you say Allentown Mac?
Sorry,
is that the case you cited?
I believe it's Allentown Broadcasting. I can get
that. Oh, okay. All right.
It's the 1950s.
Allentown Mac's a labor case. I didn't see the connection.
Okay. On the waiver point, we would just emphasize that what he would need to show is that we, of course, abused our discretion here. I would argue what he needs to show is that there was some plus factor, something that the rules didn't account for, and instead I believe all he showed was that, well, I was close but fell short. So there's no plus factor. It's just straightforward application of the rule. So we don't deny that a waiver might be possible under some circumstances, but there's just no showing here.
Have you given a waiver before?
We've not given a waiver of this 307B preference, and as Your Honor pointed out, we refused a waiver in a similar circumstance.
What's the answer to the lock-in question? What's the obligation of the licensee?
It's certainly a fair question. I think it's a little ambiguous under the rules, and I can't answer it.
Where does the 4 years idea?
Well, the 4 years is certainly that the ambiguity arises if you compare, I believe it's 73.7002, parentheses B versus 7005C. I hope I got this right, but cited in the brief. One says that the applicant must construct the facilities as contemplated and cannot decrease service for 4 years. And another rule says must construct and operate as contemplated. The question is whether or not the applicant is under an obligation to operate, or whether he could say, I promise to continue covering the same NCE population, but I also want to cover more. I can't say in the 15 years that the rule has been in operation, he hasn't cited a single instance in which that's actually happened.
But there's no prohibition on serving more later.
I wouldn't say there's no. I unfortunately have to say that it's an open question because the commission hasn't interpreted that part of the rules. But there's certainly a strong argument that the holding period would foreclose that.
Would the operator have to take any further action toward a change license or change permission from the FCC to expand its coverage?
Yes, Your Honor. There would be an opportunity then to examine that. It would be called a minor modification, and you have to get permission from the FCC.
So would that create a proceeding in which someone could intervene to object to that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Were there other questions I can help the court with?
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see. All right, Mr. Barton, you've used your time. We'll give you a minute.
I can, responding again to the issue of can an applicant increase its coverage area after it's already been given a permit on the basis of an original proposal, I can tell you from personal experience in working with applicants in just that situation that the commission's processing staff only focuses on, are you continuing to cover that area that was underserved in the first place? They don't care. They have not given us any guidance to restrict us from expanding our coverage in other directions.
All right.
Thank you.
Will you call the